Radio Prague News. The opposition Topo 9 party says the government violated Czech and international law in releasing terrorist suspect Ali Fayyad. Defence Minister Martin Stropnický, who is under fire for speaking freely to the media about the case of the five Czechs kidnapped in Lebanon, will remain in office. And a Turkish national convicted in his homeland of a crime with a terrorist subtext will not be extradited to Turkey, the regional court in Hradec Králové ruled on Friday. The opposition Topo 9 party says the government violated Czech and international law in releasing terrorist suspect Ali Fayyad, who was wanted by the US authorities. The party claims that since the Czech Republic refused to extradite him, he should have been prosecuted in this country. Topo 9 has allegedly asked a Prague state attorney to look into the matter. Fayyad was released on the order of the Czech justice minister on the same day that five Czechs kidnapped in Lebanon returned home. Czech Defence Minister Martin Stropnický, who is under fire for speaking freely to the media about the case of the five Czechs kidnapped in Lebanon, will remain in office. Following a meeting of coalition leaders on Friday, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said the minister had erred, but not to such an extent that he should be sacked. Stropnický told the daily Hospodarské noviny last week that the release of five Czechs kidnapped in Lebanon was conditional on Prague's decision not to extradite terrorist suspect Ali Fayyad to the United States. Deputy Prime Minister Pavel Bělobrádek on Thursday called on Defence Minister Stropnický to consider resigning from his post over the matter. Similar calls have come from the opposition on the grounds that the Defence Minister had committed a grave breach of security. A Turkish national convicted in his homeland of a crime with a terrorist subtext will not be extradited to Turkey, the regional court in Hradec Králové ruled on Friday. Nazmi Sahin, 30, was arrested in the Czech Republic last year on an Interpol warrant. His lawyer, Zuzana Dostálková, dismissed claims of terrorism, saying that her client had been convicted of political activities, which she likened to dissident activities in communist Czechoslovakia. The judge ruled Sahin was free to go. He had been moving around Europe for 6 years and had reportedly been granted political asylum in Italy. The lower house on Friday met to debate the migrant crisis and the official stance of the Czech government to developments. Opposition deputies criticised the government for not having rejected mandatory refugee quotas outright and expressed concern over the fact that the European Union was not able to bring the influx of refugees under control. Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek defended the government's stand, saying that the priorities were to secure the EU's outer borders, bring the flow of migrants under control by establishing functional registration hotspots, and maintain the Schengen open space. Meanwhile, President Miloš Zeman has said that the solution to the migrant crisis in Europe is the deportation of all economic migrants and religious fanatics. Speaking at a conference on social democracy in Bratislava, Mr. Zeman said Europe should not underestimate the danger of jihadists infiltrating the continent in the migrant wave and setting up dormant terrorist cells in Europe. The president said Europe's social democrats must take responsibility for the defense of European values. Tomáš Holub, General Secretary of the Czech Bishops' Conference, has been appointed Bishop of Plzeň. The appointment by Pope Francis was announced by the Papal Nuncio in the Church of St. Bartholomew in Plzeň. Tomáš Holub will replace the outgoing Bishop František Radkovský on April 30th. Radkovský announced his resignation upon reaching the age of 75. Holub served as the Czech Army's first military chaplain. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The weekend should be partly cloudy to overcast with some snow and day temperatures between 4 and 8 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program: a fire broke out at the National Museum. The National Museum says that a trio of companies is liable for the damages. Cybersecurity and how ready the state is to counter and combat cyber threats. We look at that also in today's show. And in the second half of the program, we'll be talking to the French-born Axel Droxler. He's the lead designer of two popular video game titles. A blaze raged overnight on the roof of the National Museum atop Prague's Wenceslas Square. The contractors involved insist that adequate fire prevention precautions were in place, but the National Museum says that a trio of companies was fully liable for the damages. Dominic Yoon has more.
Firefighters received a call from a night watchman at the museum shortly after 1:30 a.m. They soon arrived on the scene and declared the fire to be of the most severe fourth category. A spokesperson for the service later described the blaze as of an extraordinary scope. It is believed that the right side of the wooden frame of the building's roof, facing down to the square, caught fire, reportedly near the location of an electrical relay area. The blaze was brought under control by around 3:30 a.m., while smoke continued to belch out of the roof for some hours thereafter. Of the 150 firefighters involved, one was reportedly taken to hospital suffering from smoke inhalation. The specific cause of the fire, as well as the precise level of damage, are not yet known. The historical National Museum building dates back to the late 19th century. Built in the neo-Renaissance style, it sits in an iconic location just above the famous Wenceslas Monument statue. During the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968, the museum found itself under fire from Russian tanks. It is said that the bullet and mortar holes were deliberately filled in the wrong colour as a subtle protest. The turbulence of the 20th century, including structural damage caused by the construction of the A-line section of the nearby metro station in 1978, led to growing concerns that the National Museum building was falling into a dangerous state of disrepair. The building has been closed since 2011, its entire collection relocated, while major reconstruction work takes place, scheduled to end in 2017. The preliminary price tag for the reconstruction is just under 1.7 billion crowns. The contractors, known as MPI, an abbreviation for three firms, Metrostav, Brumstav and Imos, were reportedly working under far looser building site fire safety guidelines rather than those that would have been required if the museum was in operation. However, Metrostav's construction director Jan Kuchera insisted that the precautions in place were sufficient.
Relatively huge anti-fire measures are in place at the museum site, and fire prevention officers are in place 24 hours a day.
According to museum director Michal Lukes, an investigation will now be carried out into the cause of the blaze. He also insisted that MPI are fully liable to the National Museum for any damages caused. A 1 billion crown insurance policy is written into MPI's renovation contract. According to Czech Culture Minister Daniel Herman, however, the damage suffered to the building is not expected to be significant.
And Dominic Yoon there reporting on the incident last night at the National Museum, a fire atop the building. Now, though, cybersecurity shot up the agenda in recent weeks in the Czech Republic after the highly publicized hacking of the Prime Minister's email and Twitter accounts by a group based in the United States. But if that's raised questions about the state's readiness to counter and combat cyber threats, the same questions hold true, perhaps even more so, for the private sector. Chris Johnston has the story.
A conference in Prague on Thursday examined how both key Czech national bodies and private companies are preparing to do battle with the threats to cybersecurity. And the message coming out of that and earlier sessions could be summed up as some progress, but a lot more needs to be done. The dangers were highlighted at the start of this year by the hacking of Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka's emails. That was embarrassing and has prompted a police investigation and steps from the National Cybersecurity Centre, the state body tasked with protecting key state infrastructures and services from attacks, to examine how it can better safeguard targets through so-called active defence. Details of that are not being revealed. At the government level, a law outlining the framework, responsibilities and strategy for cybersecurity, such as identifying key installations such as power stations and networks, emergency service and police from being disrupted and hacked, have been in place now for a year. The strategy documents had warned that police capabilities to deal with cybersecurity needed to be substantially bolstered. And there has been action. A major two-day exercise back in October, for example, simulated a hacking attack on a nuclear power plant. Cooperation agreements between the centre and NATO and with key countries which lead in cybersecurity, such as the US, South Korea, Israel and Estonia, have been forged, and Czech universities are also on board. But a lot of questions still seem to be posed. For one thing, the line between public and private, which is drawn by the Czech law on cybersecurity, are not quite so clear-cut on the ground. State companies often outsource part of their IT and cybersecurity responsibilities to private companies. Some may store key data in cloud systems that might be based abroad. And Czech companies, which have for the most part been immune from large-scale attacks so far, are, according to some experts, not that well prepared for what could be coming their way, as an increasing amount of key client and company data are amassed day to day. This is what Czech IT expert and member of the Czech Institute of Security Managers, Tomáš Flieder, had to say about the cybersecurity preparedness of Czech companies.
They are certainly not prepared very well, but the situation is improving. In some sectors, it's improving very rapidly. The problem is motivation, because the top management of the company has to be ready and has to consider cybersecurity as their main topic. Unfortunately, that is not often so.
Flieder warns as well that some companies, when faced with fulfilling their legal cybersecurity responsibilities, actually prefer to take a fine rather than do the work, because it comes out as a cheaper option in the short term.
Okay, and that was Chris Johnstone with that report. Next up, in today's arts, we'll be talking with a French Prague-based game designer, Axel Droxler. He's the lead designer for two titles for the independent studio Dreadlocks: the popular debut Dex, set in a cyberpunk world, and the upcoming Ghost Theory. Fans of the paranormal will want to stay tuned for that, as the game in development aims to make use of virtual reality headsets to provide an experience like no other. Before we discuss Ghost Theory, though, Dex, what has been described as a digital RPG or role-playing game.
That's how the genre started. People were trying to adapt the genre to video games. But obviously there's big differences, like the main one being that in a pen and paper RPG, you always play with what is called a game master or something, another person who's actually there and who will tell you if what you're doing is right or wrong, or you know, like who will tell you the story as you go, and so who can react to anything you decide to do. Mm-hmm. So you're completely free when you play this kind of game. But in a video game, obviously, every aspect of the story has to be pre-programmed by us, so we can't offer as many possibilities as you would have when talking to a person. Mm-hmm. Your choices will always be more limited in the video game version than in a pen and paper version.
The genre of Dex is this kind of dystopian future, which as a lot of fans, of course, fans of Blade Runner will recognize mm-hmm. it. Fans of William Gibson will be familiar mm-hmm. with that right away. Were these all inspirations?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the big inspiration is the cyberpunk genre. So William Gibson, for example, was like the main inspiration, definitely. And like you said, Blade Runner as well, movies like that. Also other video games, like I don't know if you know the series Deus Ex, but that's also like the big cyberpunk game that's very popular. So all of these were inspirations indeed for the game.
And when you choose a character to play, do you have an array of different characters you can choose from, or is that character set?
No, in Dex you play as Dex. That's the name of the main character, actually. So you cannot play as anyone else. However, you can still decide to some extent what her personality is like, because when you interact with other characters in the game, you can decide what you tell them. So you can be friendly, you can be arrogant, you can be mean, you can be whatever you want. So you have freedom on that front, but you cannot decide anything else about the character. You also have choices not only in dialogues, but also in the way you go around in the world. You can explore the entire city in any order you like, so you can go there first or there first, and some areas can be traversed in different ways. So if you prefer to go the sneaky way, you can avoid enemies, or you can kill everyone, or so you also have choices on that front, not mm-hmm. just in the way you talk. You have the main storyline, which is something that cannot change, that you kind of have to go through, that we can direct and control. So you have minimal influence of that on that storyline, even though we still have multiple endings, but it's only at the end that you make the choices, not before. But to compensate for that, we also have what we called side missions, side quests, which are completely optional, which involve other characters. And in those cases, you're free to do whatever you want. So you can really influence the lives of other characters and change them any way you want. And these don't have an impact on the main storyline, but they have an impact on your experience.
One of the things that fascinates me about video games, it strikes me, is that so much different talent goes into producing a game. Obviously, you have the programmers, but there's all kinds of artistic work. You have the different illustrations, the artwork, the story itself, writers, music, voiceovers. To me, it strikes me that it's very similar to something like making a film, where you have a huge team that has to come together. Would you agree that there are similarities?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and actually, the video game industry is getting bigger and bigger in terms of budgets and revenue and everything, and it's actually now pretty much on par with cinema. Like the big blockbuster games actually make more money than the big movies, which is crazy to think about. If you remember, like 20 years ago, that would never have happened. But and yeah, the range of talent that's involved is also on par in a way. Like you have so many different lines of work that are used to making a video game. And you also have people crossing over more and more, like people coming from the movie industry to work on games. So famous, screenwriters or people like that
voice actors,
definitely, that bring their experience to the video game industry to raise the bar as well. So it's definitely going to merge more and more as we go.
Dex made use of crowdfunding. It seems more and more that is a very successful or useful tool in getting projects off the ground. And you have a new, I suppose, more ambitious project called Ghost Theory, which is now in crowdfunding. And tell me, what, in a nutshell, is that game or experience about?
So that's a completely different game. You are basically a paranormal investigator, and you, in the game, you will visit multiple haunted places and try to discover the reason behind their haunting and try to banish the ghosts from. So it's really like those classic horror movies, like Amityville or all these
Poltergeist.
Yeah, exactly. All these ghost stories. So it will be scary, and so you will be alone exploring those empty haunted houses, and there will be weird things happening around you, and you will have to survive, because the ghost will eventually attack you, and basically try to find a way to get rid of these ghosts.
Mm-hmm. And from some of the material that I was watching, if I understand correctly, some of these locations are existing, or all of these locations actually exist.
Yeah, that's one thing that, as we were thinking about the concept more and more, we thought, like, it would actually be a lot cooler if we use real places instead of made-up places. Because that way, I mean, people who are actually interested in this would probably love to explore those places. And there are so many great ghost stories all around the world that we can use and adapt, transfer into our game. So that's what we're trying to do. Actually, the objective is that every location in the game will be based on a real haunted place.
Usually, when you see, say, Hollywood stories about haunted houses, the main obstacle to overcome is just getting out of the house. If you look at Poltergeist or Amityville Horror, those kinds of films, it's a problem for the protagonists just to escape. When you have people, actual owners of homes here, do they believe that the site actually is inhabited by the paranormal, by a ghost? And if so, what are they still doing there?
Yeah, I guess most of them don't believe in it. It's actually clear that some of them are actually making a business out of it. You can, like, in some of those places, you can rent a room, you can spend the night there and to spook yourself, I guess. And so definitely some people are making a business out of it. And it's those who are the most willing to be featured in the game, because I guess it would be good publicity for them. So no, yeah, most of the ones we've contacted and who agreed, I suppose, don't actually believe in it. The thing is, some owners own the place but don't live there themselves. So nice. There's also that. So yeah,
it's an interesting talking point if you own a property that is believed to be haunted. And I suppose not all spirits are malevolent, I guess. That's another thing. One of the big aspects of this, given that it is a horror genre, is immersion. More and more we hear about this kind of, like,
this desire to recreate the whole gaming experience as a kind of visitation of another world. And I imagine that virtual reality in this case is one of the big parts of this project. So tell me about that.
Yeah, that's how the project started. We wanted to make a game that was designed primarily for virtual reality, because that's the big technology that's coming out. Well, this year the first headsets are going to be commercially released this year, and it really is a new experience. It really feels to put the headset on and then you're really in the world. It enhances everything about the game, and so then it becomes kind of the obvious choice to make a horror game, because obviously that would make everything 10 times more scary.
Do you have to anticipate, say, some side effects of that, that something could be too scary?
Yeah. And actually, that's one of the comments we've received the most so far since we announced the game. A lot of people said, oh, if it's going to be too scary, I don't think I can play it. Before they even see what it is, you know, before they even tried it, they're already saying, no, that's going to be too scary. So we are taking this into account for sure. And we are not planning to have things jumping at you, you know, actually like in most horror movies where you have the big jump scare. You will be scared, but it's more about building the atmosphere and the immersion. You will hear sounds around you. You won't know where it's coming from. You will feel uneasy, but we're not gonna give you a heart attack every 2 minutes. You know, that's not the point. So
it's more about a kind of growing sense of dread.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the cool things that I got a kick out of reading about it is that in the game you kind of have to rely on these classic tools of ghost hunters or paranormal investigators. What are some of these tools? I know one of them is a camera, simple camera.
Yeah, well, that's also something, because we, by looking at other horror games, we realized that they are all pretty similar to each other. You either have the ones where you're completely defenseless and you're just running away from monsters, or the ones where you have a shotgun and you kill everything. But we wanted to find this middle ground, and so you will go in there with your equipment. You know what you're doing, but of course you're still vulnerable against ghosts. And so the tools, you indeed have a camera that you can use to record. If you actually witness an apparition somewhere, you can try to record it to gather evidence of the haunting. You have EVP recorder. EVP means electronic voice phenomenon. That's something that's believed to be the manifestation of spirits. You basically record the ambient sound, and when you play it back, you hear among the static voices. So of course some people say that it's all in your head and it's fake. Some people believe in it. Obviously for the purpose of the game, it will be real, it will be true.
I imagine also must be scary when you shine that light on and you see through the ultraviolet spectrum that something is there that the human eye normally couldn't see.
Yeah, so that's another gadget that we have. It's this UV lamp that is used in forensics as well, so to reveal things that you can't see, and there would be traces of what we're calling ectoplasm, which is also a common ghost thing. So you will know where the ghost has been, what objects he's touched, and that will give you clues about what the ghost really wants and how you can maybe banish it.
You're the lead designer on both Dex and on Ghost Theory. I wanted to ask you what your philosophy is when it comes to designing video games, or you bring to both titles.
Personally, yeah, all the games I've worked on so far were really focusing on player choice and giving freedom of choice and expression to the player, because most of them were role-playing games. And so that's something that I really, really like to put into games. And so even though Ghost Theory is not supposed to be a role-playing game, we're still going to try to give you, again, choices and different ways to go about your missions and solve them. So that's one thing that I believe is important in games. Of course, not all games. I enjoy a lot of games that don't offer you any choice, and that's great as well. So, but personally, yeah, that's kind of the thing I'm going for, both because I like it and because I was kind of forced to because of the projects I worked on. So it's
So kind of a happy outcome.
Yeah.
Okay, you've been listening to The Arts. My guest this week, Axel Droxler, lead designer for two titles for the independent game development studio known as Dreadlocks. My thanks again to him for coming in, for talking to me about some of those projects. And if you're interested, of course, you can look up that story and many others again on our website. Radio.cz is the address to visit. Also, if you want to comment on anything you've heard in today's program, you have any questions for us, any comments, it's easy to contact us here. English@radio.cz is our address. That's it, though. We're out of time. I'm Jan Wellinger for myself and all of us here at the station. Thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care.